gets Timmy D, Chrissy D, right in sight. Yeah.
Oh, kind of messed it up.
It's all good. All right, let's start. Hello, Fight Insight fans, listeners, viewers. Today we have a very special guest. Tim's going to introduce him. But we also have Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu Fight On Site edition, which is going to be very exciting, and also many more. We are going to have a very fun-packed episode for today. And so, you know what? Tim, carry it away. Introduce our guests.
All right. So our guest today, this is crazy. So I came across this individual on UFC Fight Pass, and we'll get into it. But this individual, he was a nationally ranked gymnast in the United States, went on to become a coach, coached as an assistant coach at Penn State University and other great places. He then transitioned into jiu-jitsu, where he now owns a gym, Impact Fountain Hills Jiu-Jitsu. Impact Fountain Hills Jiu-Jitsu in Arizona. He's big into movement, big into jiu-jitsu. He's a competitive jiu-jitsu practitioner. And also recently, and this is where I know him, competed in combat jiu-jitsu, which we definitely want to ask him about. Please welcome our guest, Mr. Michael Currier.
Hey guys, how's it going?
Hey Michael. How's it going? Welcome, buddy.
Good to see you.
Yeah, good to be here.
Hey, cool, man. I do have to ask you, first off, how famous are you from this combat jiu-jitsu that you did? Like, this was pretty crazy.
It was pretty good. I think I think I picked up about 500 new followers overnight.
Yeah, okay.
Just from that, you know. But, you know, I think it was a combination where I had you know, at one point on the UFC Fight Pass Instagram page, three of the most recent 9 videos were me. So,
yeah,
I mean, it was me getting my ass kicked, but it was me. So I'll take it.
No. And I mean, and that is kind of weird, like, you know, to kind of be talking to you about that. But this brings into play, like, what the heck is combat jiu-jitsu?
Yeah.
But before we get into that, I think, Prince, we want to ask Mike about who he is, right?
That's it. So, Mike, first question. But so we want to know, like, Fight Insight fans, listeners, viewers, we all want to know. So who is Michael Currier? Like,
yeah.
Let us know. Like, what's going on?
I've had a crazy life, man. I think this is like the fourth niche sport that I've been famous in. I mean, like, where it's been like, you know, I was a nationally ranked gymnast. You know, I worked for Cirque du Soleil.
What?
Yeah. So they scouted me in high school up in Montreal. And
that's crazy.
And
really?
Then, I worked for a stuntman place in Orlando, Florida. I did stunts for a living. I was a professional inline skater. I've got like magazine covers and stuff. And so it's like, it's just interesting. I think, every step along my life, I have found this weird little sport that I've gotten decent enough at to be able to do it for a living. And so now I'm 40 years old and I'm still playing, and just, you know, I haven't had a real job really ever. And, you know, it's like,
oh man, but Mike, listen, man, you make me feel bad. Man, I barely made my ultimate frisbee team. I got cut first round. Like, I'm like, coach, please put me in, man. And look at your life. Like, look at all the stuff you've accomplished, man. That's amazing.
So it's been a good life. Before this interview goes off on a total tangent, I mean, what Cirque du Soleil were you in?
This is like in the 90s, right? And so this is when they had one troupe. And they basically powwowed up in Montreal. And then they had little places where you would go to kind of practice for shows. And so, you know, I was 18 years old. I had been planning on attending Penn State for a gymnastics scholarship. And I literally snuck away a weekend and I signed a contract with the Army. And I joined the Army instead, and like went home and said, "Hey, mom, like I'm not doing college or Cirque or anything. I'm gonna join the Army." And so, so yeah, it was like a brief stint with them. And then I came back to it a little bit and then trained with them. I got a bunch of friends who I worked with on the Love Show, which is like the Beatles
one
show in Vegas and that kind of stuff. So, rollerblading was really, really big in that show. And so we did a lot with that.
That's awesome. Very cool.
Yeah, it was cool, you know, but I've always had commitment issues. So it was like when it was time for me to, you know, do anything for real, I was like, I'm going to be a hippie and just travel and do weird shit.
Mike, you know what? That's what I was thinking. Like, I've got a visual image of you just literally just by the road with your knapsack and all like ripped up jean jacket. Just like, I'm taking a hike out of this town. I'm on to the next town.
That really is it. I mean, you know, I moved from couch to couch. I owned a suitcase full of clothes for like almost 7 years, but that's all I had. You know, I lived under an overpass in Philadelphia, like literally up under the overpass, like on the highway. And that's where I lived, you know? And so
incredible.
It's been a wild adventure.
And so now your life has taken you into jiu-jitsu, which is now, this is your current love of your life. And so talk to us about Impact Fountain Hills.
So, you know, it's pretty crazy. I'm from Ohio originally. I grew up wrestling. My grandfather owned a Kenpo karate school. So I have a martial arts background since I was like 3 years old. But I was 33 years old. I had a 4-year-old kid, and we went to this jungle gym. It was like, it's called Safari Sam's. It was like, it's closed now, but it was kind of like an indoor play place for kids. And like two doors down was a Taekwondo school that had jiu-jitsu. And my wife and I walked in. I said, hey, we should try this. And so I ran home. I grabbed some sweatpants and I went to class. And it happened to be Impact Jiu-Jitsu. And I went home. I said, yo, I love this. Like, we have to do this forever. And so... I did my first tournament like after 3 weeks of training, and was like, let's just do this. Let's go all in. And, you know, at the time my wife had just started, her doctorate program at University of Portland. And so we kind of knew that, you know, we were only going to be in Portland for 6 years and then we were gone because we didn't like it there. We were just there for her school. And so, you know, I made the decision after like a month of doing jiu-jitsu that like I had to get a black belt in 6 years. And I'm like, you know, I've got to be good enough that I can open a gym. And so I was doing 40 plus hours a week of jiu-jitsu. And I bought my first gym about 16 months into training with my coach. And then we expanded to a bigger gym. And then we moved away and I opened up the Impact down here in Fountain Hills.
That is crazy. And I mean, you know, we've talked about this before on the podcast, Prince, about coaches, right? And about the personalities and things like that. Because Mike, when I see you on Instagram and I follow you around, man, you are a very likable guy on camera, right? Like, and in person too. But on camera, I mean, you can tell you've got that coach's mentality.
Sure.
Because you're kind of the guy that's very like, you know, works with the people, talks with the people, enjoys being around people. So that whole gymnastic background must have been a huge benefit for your movement in jiu-jitsu, right?
Oh, for sure. I mean, you know, I think that, you know, not only the movement, but, you know, I started coaching gymnastics when I was 15. And so, you know, coaching is coaching. I think once you find your rhythm, it's easy to convey your message to anybody you're teaching, you know? And so, but as far as the movement goes, it was funny because the first instinct in jiu-jitsu is to fall back on your wrestling, you know, because you grew up wrestling. And so that held me back so much. I mean, I'm 140 pounds. I'm a small guy. And I came from a gym that was mostly big guys and I was trying to wrestle, you know, I'm trying to do wrestling. And, you know, in wrestling, there's never an open class match, right? You're only wrestling somebody your own weight. There's never an open class, right? And usually it's like 5 or 6 pounds difference, you know? So I'm looking at guys who are wrestling works great against guys your size. But when you got a guy who's 200 pounds, maybe he's a blue belt and you're brand new and I'm trying to wrestle him, I was getting smashed, you know? And so I was really frustrated. I thought, man, what am I doing here? And I love my coach, but he was a very MMA heavy, very, 180 pounds, super athletic young guy. And he had a hard time telling me how to make up for my inadequacies. Right. And so I tell the story over and over again, but there was a Jeff Glover versus Bill Cooper match. They were teammates, but they made the finals of this invitational in Japan, and they had a match for the finals. And I watched that match, and it completely changed my life. You know, like, I saw this guy who was doing more of a gymnastics, like a b-boy style jiu-jitsu, and I thought, holy shit, I can do that. Like, I can do what he's doing, you know. And I went back into the gym, and you know, luckily Impact was a family that allowed me to try weird stuff. You know, don't forget that, I mean, this is only 6 years ago, but 6 years ago, people were still having the debate if deep half was going to be a thing or not. Like, right. This is not real, you know. So Baron Bolos was like, what are you doing? You know, but my gym was all about it. I said, hey, you know, figure out your way. And so I started doing more of the gymnastics style, and started mixing in, you know, inverted guard and all that kind of stuff. And it really kind of hit home. And I was able to run with that, you know, and they say, okay, now my movement, now my flexibility, now my aerial awareness and my ability to do handstands and all kinds of weird stuff can work really well for jiu-jitsu. And then about, you know, midway through my purple belt, I started bringing the wrestling back in, you know? And so now that I have a foundation, I can use some of the wrestling when it's applicable, but the movement, everything comes back to my gymnastics background. It's literally helped me, in every aspect of my life. You know, when I was a professional skater, people used to literally say, like, oh, of course you can do that. You used to be a gymnast. And I used to be upset about that. Like, I used to think it was like they were not being nice to me because they were saying, of course I can do that. Of course I was good at basketball because I was a gymnast. Like, but I worked my butt off to be a good gymnast, you know?
Yeah, so, yeah. Sorry, I've trained all my life and exactly, made, like, myself an athlete.
Right. It wasn't just given to me, you know? And so, yeah, man, I think that foundationally for athletes, man, having that gymnastics foundation, you just can't beat it.
Nice. Yeah. So, you know what, in terms of, Mike, in terms of your home gym, so Impact Jiu-Jitsu. So, like, say, you know, somebody coming from, you know, from Canada or just coming down to train in your areas, so, like, what would we expect? Like, say there was something that, you know, you'd come down and check out that gym. Like, what would be a beginner, like maybe such as myself, who's coming in and wanting to know more about it and hearing your story too and wanting to learn more about this jiu-jitsu? Like, what do we expect at your gym?
You know, one of my big rules is I don't teach to beginners. Okay, so I've always said I'm going to teach the class. I'm going to teach. My goal is that you retain about 10% of what I taught, right? And so I would much rather you get the gist of it and understand what jiu-jitsu is supposed to look like, than to master one thing and have no idea how to find that thing. And I think that's the biggest separation from what I've seen in traditional martial arts or traditional jiu-jitsu. You come to class, they teach you one technique kind of in this vacuum, and you get really good at knowing maybe 100 techniques perfectly, but when it comes time to sparring or having live roles, you don't know how to link those together and you can't find them, and so you end up kind of lost. And so we teach everything based off of a flow, and so you'll learn kind of you know, 7 moves in one day that all kind of flow together.
Oh, that's so cool.
And so the goal is that you can do all of those things in the flow poorly, but you can do them, right? And so you're gonna miss the arm bar, you're gonna miss the guard pass, but you're recognizing how things link together, because ultimately jiu-jitsu is about the connections, not about the techniques. So
Mike, you should patent that. Yeah. You should have a name for it, man. I like it, because it's like, it's not traditional. It's just like you come in and just go with the flow. Yeah. And then later on, you start, you know, it's just everything, mechanics all starts to link, yeah. And then you just start figuring it out on your own, right? It's like, you know, like you're going for Muay Thai. Okay, you do your stance, you right, left, block, all this, right? But with that, I mean, that's kind of unique, man, especially if somebody wants to go give it a try. I mean, maybe you'll need to learn more, right? So well, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I think awesome. That, you know, the hard part is that people want that, they want to have a submission every class. People like to learn that, right? They want to have this. They want to have this climax.
Yeah, that's why I partner with Prince.
Yes, it's a guaranteed submission, right?
Yeah, this guy's literally every time going for the legs. I'm like, can you relax, man? Calm it down.
Yeah.
And then you just got to give him a good square punch in the dick.
Sorry. Of course.
That's it. That's how you get the job. That's how you break out or you tap out early. Right.
Yeah. So
that's
what you do. Hey, we also teach heel hooks at white belt, you know, and so, you know, we're a very polite school, but, you know, if I rear naked choke, I don't care if it's a choke, if it's a neck crank, it doesn't matter. You know, if you want to be a crazy wrist locker, you can do that. But, you know, so your first day might be coming in on a day that I'm teaching K-guard entries to heel hooks. And, hey,
that's your first day.
It's your first day. It is what it is.
Wow.
But I think that what we see is this tends to make mediocre, if not poor, white belts, but it makes really, really good higher level belts.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I think so often we get really, really good at beating other white belts, and then we get really, really good at beating other blue belts, and we get good at these individual kind of transition points. What happens is that often doesn't translate to being a good black belt, right? And so my goal, and I tell my guys all the time, is like, if you win a world championship at white belt, you're the best worst dude out there, right? Like, the best of the worst, right? Like, it's such an odd thing to have world champion. Congrats if you win world to, you know, white belt, that's fine. But at the end of the day, like, I would rather you be a dreadful color belt and an excellent black belt, you know, because that's what the end goal is, you know? And oftentimes you see guys really get stuck at brown belt, or they get to their black belt and they just haven't really learned to put it together yet, you know? And so it's a longer learning curve for us, but I think the end result is going to be a stronger result.
Oh man, I can see myself out of the first day out of Mike's class, Tim, it'll be like this. Hey, Ma, I learned how to do it. Let me show you how to do a heel hook. I learned the first day, right?
So, they're super safe. It's fine.
Yeah, it's fine. You can't get hurt.
No, I think that.
Yeah. So, Mike, you know, I want to tell people. So, first of all, we're going to put, you know, how to follow you down in the YouTube and stuff like that. We'll put all your links and we'll talk about it at the end. But so when I first saw you, right, it's on UFC Fight Pass. So whoever has UFC Fight Pass, go check it out. But I'm going to show a screenshot here. This is what caught me. And this is this happy guy here. Oh, man. And he's, you know, BJ Penn style. He's pulling off the blood and he's got it on. And I mean, so you're in this combat jiu-jitsu, which is now a whole different world of jiu-jitsu, right? Because combat jiu-jitsu, for those that don't know, it's jiu-jitsu competition, but they allow strikes, open hand strikes.
Yep.
And I read they also allow up kicks.
No.
Is that?
No.
No?
No. Nope.
Okay, so no. I thought it was no up kicks. And then as I was doing research, I came across a website that said up kicks. Okay.
That would have helped me so much.
This is what I'm saying because, so you can open hand, but you can't. Open palm, but you can't do it while you're standing.
Correct.
Okay. And this
grounded.
And this came from the mind of Eddie Bravo.
Yeah. I think, you know, cause so if you know the history of 10th Planet, you know, Eddie Bravo's rubber guard was an MMA guard.
Okay.
And the whole point is with rubber guard, I can completely stop you from punching me.
Right.
It's perfect for that. And, it evolved into sport jiu-jitsu. And they have a whole different realm, of what rubber guard looks like. And I think, you know, from what Eddie says, he just wanted to get back to the roots of it and show that, you know, you could use striking to set up jiu-jitsu, and you could use jiu-jitsu to stop striking. And this was the most pure way to do it. You know, we don't have to work from the feet. We know what happens in the feet. You know, if you're on the feet, then you're not doing jiu-jitsu anyway, right? You're looking at other striking arts. This is what happens after the fight hits the ground, you know? And so they even have a get down rule. So you can only be standing for 30 seconds and then you have to go to the ground, because the emphasis of jiu-jitsu is what happens then. And so, it takes the emphasis off of the grappling, because, you know, don't forget, at the end of the day, if I'm in a street fight, I'm not looking to go to the ground, right?
Right. Yeah. Like, oh, I think we may have a little bit of a connection problem. You there, Prince?
I'm there. Mike?
Or he's totally pausing to fool us. But I think he might be out. Hold on one sec. We'll see. We'll see if he comes back here.
It's a full guard.
This is what a rubber guard does. It totally sticks you. Hold on, let me
freeze in one spot.
I'm gonna kick him out here and then see if he'll come back in. Let's see if he joins back up. But hopefully he does. Hopefully he does. So you know, the video that I'm watching of him, and so I'll talk about it while he's gone. He's in guard and the other guy is on top and just starts throwing down strikes with open palm. Okay, here he is. He's back. Hold on.
Hey, sorry.
How's it going, Mike? No worries. So I was just saying the video that I saw you in was where you're in guard, like you're talking about, you're in guard, and the other guy postures up and then he starts throwing palm strikes.
Yeah.
And I was thinking in my head, I'm like, man, it would be nice if this guy could upkick here.
Oh, of course.
Because he does, right? Because it was like, that would be another limb for you to counterattack with.
For sure. Yeah. Give me a tool. You know.
Yeah. And during the fight, though, man, the crowd went crazy when you ended up throwing a left hook from the ground.
Yeah.
And you throw a left hook, and I mean, with open palm.
Yeah.
But it hits him so hard, and the whole crowd goes,
when you landed that left, I'm like, Mike, just keep going. Right. I'm literally, I'm in there just because, you know what, you had him down and he just kept, when I'm my first time seeing him, like, you're allowed to do this? Like, this is nuts. And when he was squaring you and you got him with the left, I'm like, oh man, he better come up and just like it's round and pound him, right? Actually, you know what, before we continue with this talking about this fight, which is crazy, you know what, Mike, maybe explain to our viewers what a rubber guard is.
Yeah, so basically rubber guard, we're looking at getting our legs, you know, traditionally guard is kind of like at the belt level, right? So I have my ankles crossed around your waist, around the small of your back, kind of under your rib cage. So when you play rubber guard, you walk your guard up higher so that your thighs are in their armpits, and then you can have your shin ends up being perpendicular or parallel to the shoulders across the back.
Yeah.
And then I can use my arm to grab my own leg, right?
Yes.
Right. Wrap you and kind of keep you pinned to me.
And that's what we often see in MMA when guys will employ the rubber guard. They're really doing it to kind of totally put a pause to the fight to get it stood up.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Yep. Yeah.
Which is where it works great. You know, ultimately, you know, any type of a closed guard, you can't get up with it. Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're locking yourself to someone. I can stop them from punching me, but I can't get up with rubber guard. Right. Rubber guard, it can be used to make a submission happen, but ultimately we're looking at just trying to stop the strikes from happening. And actually at one point within, you know, in my match, I had rubber guard and they reset it back to the middle. I had rubber guard. I felt strong there, but I'm completely incapable of stalling a match out for better or for worse. You know, I think that like, it's just not what I do, you know?
Yeah.
And, I thought, you know, I could hold this guy here. I could probably hold him for 4 minutes and get to overtime, you know, but, I like fighting.
Yeah. Mike, actually just wanted to ask you also, please. Like, how did you see that fight going? Like, how did you want it to, like, you know, go your way? Like, how did you want it to, you know, like, in terms of you, what was your next step after you pulled that rubber guard? Because I saw you pull that rubber guard and go, okay, I wonder what he's going to do next, right?
Yeah. You know, I think that it went how I thought it would go. I mean, I knew David was going to be, you know, an MMA guy. You know, he didn't try to pass guard. He didn't try to submit me. He just wanted to sit in my guard and just throw strikes, you know?
Oh, so you knew, that guy?
Yeah. And so, you know, I expected it. I knew it. I wanted it, you know, I thought this was fine. You know, I think one of the biggest problems with that fight was, it didn't hurt, you know, like it doesn't hurt to get hit, you know, you're fine. And so, I wasn't like fake laughing. Like I thought it was hilarious, you know, like
we're
doing this thing and he's punching, he's you know, smacking me, I'm smacking him.
Yeah.
And everything was fine. You know, it was about a 7 minute long out of 10 minute long match. It wasn't until that last flurry that he cut my eye open that it got bad, you know?
Like,
and so the downfall of the whole thing was my reluctantness to defend, because it wasn't knocking me out, right? Like I wasn't like getting dazed. And so I didn't care if I get cut, you know, it doesn't bother me at all. Like it's all part of what we do. I wanted to, you know, I've been in jiu-jitsu matches. I've never been in an MMA fight. I wanted to get bloody. I mean, that was the plan. I mean, ask anybody leading up to it. I was like, this is going to be awesome. Like, I hope I get hit hard, you know, that's what I wanted, you know? And so, so everything was, you know, how I thought it would be, you know, but when my eye got cut, I was talking to the ref and
it seemed like you were.
Yeah. So he asked me if I was okay. I said, yeah, I'm fine. You know, and I was defending, and I was like, looked for a couple leg locks, looked for a couple triangles. You know, I was playing what I wanted to play. And he said, are you okay? I said, I'm fine. He said, can you see? And I said, I'm fine. And he said, can you see? And I said, I'm fine. And then he said, can you see? And, you know, there is no blood time. So they're not going to stop and wipe your face
and
back into it. And, you know, once blood got into my eye, I couldn't see. And I said, I can't see. And he stopped it, you know? So, but yeah, I was rocked or dazed, nothing like that. I mean, I popped right up and I was fine. And you know, and ultimately like, dude, I lose. It happens. It happens to all of us. And, you will never find like a happier loser. Like,
well,
I love when people win, even when it's not me.
But it's funny because it reminds me of the fight that happened this weekend, Vettori versus Holland. And I don't know if you saw, but when Holland gets poked in the eye, and then the ref kept, like, you could tell he was like having a lot of problems. It was swelling up. And then the ref went over to him, and as clear as day in the camera, in the mic, you can hear him go, can you see? Can you see? And Holland goes, what do you mean? And he kept like answering like really weirdly, kind of like what you're saying you were doing. You're just careful. Yeah, I'm good. I don't know.
Yeah. You gotta be careful how you answer that, you know?
Yeah.
And so did I, you know, I've got no regrets about it at all. You know, I think that, I guess the only thing that even a little bit upset me was that, you know, only that last flurry was shown, you know, at first, you know, and the match wasn't as one-sided as that one flurry made it look like, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, but even with that, man, like I've got thick skin, dude, you can't bother me. I've been through the ringer. You know, and so
you definitely do have thick skin, because I'm going to post something from your Instagram. I was dying laughing when I saw this, but you're at a seminar, and I'm assuming this guy is your friend. I hope he is your friend, but there was this here, and it says two hour guard. Hold on, I gotta take this thing off here. It says 2 hour guard passing seminar from a guy that hasn't passed guard since he was a purple belt. By that logic, you should check out my combat jiu-jitsu seminar next week. So there's a guy for sure that is definitely, you know, having a good time with it all and enjoying the whole thing, right? So
I mean, come on, I'm 40 years old. I'm still out there fighting 20 year olds. I get invited to these shows. They flew me to Cancun. I was in a resort on the beach, you know, and it's just, how can you be mad about it? You know, we're grown men in spandex wrestling around, and we get paid to do it. Like, you can't take yourself too seriously.
Hey, but you know what, Mike, I find that with this video that just popped up, the fight pass, I mean, this the fight you just had, you're like the face of combat jiu-jitsu now.
I know.
Like, regardless if you lost or not, like, you're going to be like, you're known for to be that guy. Hey, it's that guy that got all bloodied up.
Yeah.
And he still, you know, he was still ready to go. They just should have left him go and fight another round, right?
So no, the first thing my wife said to my team, who are, you know, they're all back here watching me, you know, she said, even though Mike lost, he'll find a way to steal the show.
Yeah, well, they did. They definitely have like highlighted you. And I mean, and for anybody that wants to see the fight, if you don't have Fight Pass, you can watch it on your, you have it on your YouTube, right?
Do,
on your YouTube channel, it's there. So you can watch and you can see what we're talking about because man, and I'm gonna try to post it and get people to go see because before they listen to this podcast, I'm gonna try and get people to watch because if they haven't seen it, you know, it's definitely something to see. And you talk about going around and I know you're competing all around. And like you said, you're going to Cancun and going all around the States competing. Is this like you're able to make good money from this? Like, I don't know, you know, there's a lot of people like Prince and I train in Toronto and there's the jiu-jitsu classes there and things like that. And you see people getting serious, but it's one of those things, like, is there a life to be made from this?
You know, so it's kind of like, it's a three-tier program, right? You got tier one is learning jiu-jitsu. Right. Tier two is doing all the things you can do, you know, competing, whether it's, you know, your goal is professional, right? Your goal is to do all the pro events.
Okay.
Tier three is now you have enough recognition where you can do seminars. Right. Mm. And so that's where the money is, you know, so you tier one, you're paying to learn. Tier two, you're kind of breaking even. Right. And tier three, you make money. And so, you know, I did Jiu-Jitsu Overtime, which was another EBI event.
Yeah.
They paid me $1,000, you know, to show up for that one.
Okay.
You know, so it's usually, obviously if you win, that's great. You know, I think, you know, Elias, he won like 15 or making it with like $7,000 or $8,000 from Combat Worlds, you know.
Okay.
Third Coast Grappling just did a $15,000 event, you know, but 15 dudes lost and got nothing.
Right.
Right. Yeah. So, and a lot of the times you got these events, submission only series is a really, really good up and coming event. A guy named Mike Wilson, he's a 10th Planet Black Belt, a 10th Planet Orange. He runs it. It's a great show. But you buy into it, you know, so it costs you $100 to compete. You walk out with $2,000 if you win. And those are becoming kind of most like the most normal, you know, Fight to Win is not paying anybody right now, but they were paying. You know, you can make decent money there if you brought your team. You know, I did Fight to Win in January of 2020. I think I sold like 40 or 50 tickets to the show, and I think I made like $1,000.
Right.
And so you definitely can't live off of it. You know, okay. It's not like that. So, but you know, in my mind, it's just honestly, it's about getting that recognition, you know.
Yeah.
You know, as a gym owner, the absolute best thing that comes out of these events is the fight poster. You know, I have a fight poster.
Yeah,
I
keep it awesome.
All framed on the wall of the gym. It's corny. It's like a big tribute to myself. But when people, it's awful. But when people come in and they come off the street and they see all these fight posters that all these pro events that I've done. I mean, Submission Underground 2, John Jones versus Dan Henderson was the headliner. I was on that card. You know, so to have these posters with John Jones and me on there, it immediately makes somebody who doesn't know anything about jiu-jitsu, they see that and they go, oh man, this guy is somebody.
This guy's the real thing. It's sure. He's credible. Yep. He's the thing. For combat jiu-jitsu, were you training striking? Like at what point?
I mean, you know, honestly, like we did a couple things here and there, you know, but if you look at how all the combat goes, I mean, 99% of the matches are 99% jiu-jitsu. You know, there's not a lot of striking that happens. Most guys, you know, most guys were talking backstage and they're like, I'm not even going to try to strike. You know, like I'm here to do jiu-jitsu.
Right.
And that really is, you know, even Eddie Bravo talks about that, you know, let's use our striking to advance our jiu-jitsu. Let's not just have a striking fight, you know? And so the whole point is to, you know, help your guard passing via strikes, or to set up a triangle because the guy's defending a strike, or he throws a strike and you throw up a triangle, you know,
to show how
we can exploit weaknesses of striking. The goal is not to have a TKO happen. You know, there's been three of them ever in EBI combat, you know, and so Keith Kerkorian had one and Wagner Hosha TKO'd Nathan Orchard, you know, and so and then me. And so there's just, it doesn't happen very often. And so, you know, I thought, honestly, God, I thought that, of that pick, David Weintraub was a great draw for me, you know, but he was, again, he was the only guy that was going to throw strikes. Everybody else did jiu-jitsu. This is no knock on him at all. I mean,
No. Hey, it's how that sport is going to evolve, exactly. Right?
But I think what's cool is that, you know, the beauty of the event for me was seeing David's next match was against Ben Eddy. And Ben Eddy has developed a rubber guard that is perfect. And knowing that David was going to sit in Ben's guard, I don't think David hit Ben once.
Right,
you know,
right.
David conceded guard immediately, sat in Ben's closed guard, got locked up, and got dead archered, you know? And so
nice.
It just shows you that the game can work so brilliantly against striking when that's your emphasis or when that's what you think about, you know, and that's not what I was thinking about. I wanted to go out there and do jiu-jitsu, you know? And like I said, had I gotten hit and been like, oh, that hurt, maybe I would have acted differently, you know? But it was fun.
Actually, Michael, let me just ask just for our viewers also. So,
yeah.
Like, quick Cole's notes. Like, so what's the big difference between combat jiu-jitsu and regular jiu-jitsu? So, like, just in case people are trying to differentiate too, is there, like, any other rules that we should know about aside from, like, the slapping of the hands and...
That's really it. I mean, everything else is the exact same. We're just looking at ground strikes.
Okay.
You know, you know, I'm sure you guys know Boss Rutten. Boss Rutten made the open palm strike. Mm-hmm. Very famous, you know, mm-hmm. So it's bare knuckle, so there is no wrap, something like that, and so you know, the guys who can throw a good palm strike have a great advantage, you know. And I think that you know, I kept giving everyone crap going into it because I said, oh, you know, it's slap fighting, and
slap boxing, right,
but you see that there were guys who were slapping, you know, mm-hmm. and they're just kind of they're goofing, and it doesn't hurt, and not only does it not hurt, it's just not effective, you know? Mm-hmm. So, but David, he proved that, man, those things can cut you open. And so, that's really the only difference. All submissions are still allowed. It runs, it's a 10-minute long match with EBI overtime rounds. If you go there, there's no striking allowed in the overtime. The overtime is straight grappling.
Oh, okay. Ooh, so okay. After that 10 minutes.
Yeah. Yep. And so they originally had striking allowed in the OT. But if you're starting off with somebody, you know, and you have them in an arm bar, that's a horrible spot to, you know, allow striking. And so he kind of realized that, hey, this is already, you know, this is already a ending sequence position. So we should keep it strictly for jiu-jitsu.
Right. And so, Mike, before we let you go or before we move on, is what's next for Mike Currier? Where can people see you next? What can people do? What can we expect from you?
Yeah, so I've got nothing scheduled for a competition right now. My wife is competing, so she's doing Submission on the Shore, which is a super fight event in San Pedro, California. So she's got a super fight on May 8th.
Nice.
And then the first week of June, I'm going to Maine for the BJJ Globetrotters camp. So I recently did their Tempe camp, and it's a great program. They do week long kind of summer camp style jiu-jitsu things with like 30 instructors, and we teach a couple hours a day, and then there's like evening activities like skiing and bobsledding or whatever you do. And so super fun, and I'm excited to be able to take at least the next 2 months and not think about my weight every day and. And be able to just relax and enjoy. You know, I think that you have to be so selfish when you compete. And being selfish and being a coach is a very hard balance, you know. And so I feel like I haven't seen my team in, like, months. And and so I'm excited to get back and just be a coach. And, you know, ultimately I'm excited about being able to step back and have my guys take my role, you know, and be able to help them become the next guys who are on the wall, you know. Our thing at the gym is all of our fight posters run in chronological order on the top of the gym wall. And if you get a super fight, your poster gets framed on the wall and it's there forever. And so, you know, my wife has some posters up there. We got a couple of our underbelts who have, you know, fight to win posters. And you know, my goal is to eventually stop seeing my face on the wall and start seeing my team's face on the wall.
Well, Mike, that's going to be hard to do since you've just made this like big splash. Like, oh, imagine just so everyone's going to be like, when's that bloody guy going to go up right? And fight again, right? So
yeah,
there you go.
Yeah, no, we can't wait to see you back, man. I mean, it's going to be so exciting. I mean, we're going to definitely follow you. We'll, you know, we'll share whatever it is that you're doing on our site as well. And I know hopefully the people that watch this podcast, you know, start to follow you and start to be inspired by you, because I know there's a lot, like, we know a lot of people, Prince, that are like competing and stuff like that. I'm sure that at some point they want to get on that professional circuit. They want to try out combat jiu-jitsu. They want to be like Mike, right?
Yeah. Hey, so, I get messages almost every day from people asking me, you know, how do you do it? How do you get invited? How do you do this? You know, and
yeah,
I think that, you know, it's not an easy process. It's very kind of esoteric where nobody will give you a straight answer and people are weird about it. And I think that, I love answering questions, you know, so, but I find it very, very hard to say no to about a fight. And so, you know, I'll be 50 years old and still taking fights, I'm sure. And, I've always been competitive. Like I said, every step along the way, it's been me competing in something. And I have a hard time imagining myself not doing that.
Hey, Mike, can you just do us a big favor, man? So when in your next match, can you do something for us? So when you get into a fight with this guy, can you maybe suplex him and put him in a rear naked chokehold and give him a big shout out to Fight Insight? Hey, guys, I did it for you guys.
I'll probably get disqualified, but for sure.
There you go. we don't care about that, Mike. Whatever. I mean, it doesn't matter. Where can people find you, Mike? So for the Instagram, like we said, we'll put it down here. But in case people are listening on Spotify or they're listening on Apple Podcasts, where can people find you?
Yeah, I know I'm really only active on Instagram. Mm-hmm. That's just Michael Currier BJJ. Okay. I post every day. I post everything from technique videos to a lot of self-deprecation videos, and you know, I post me doing backflips in the backyard and skateboarding and technique videos and competition stuff and just kind of, you know, day in the life of what I do every day. So I do have a YouTube page. I don't use it very often, but I post all my matches, win or lose, on my YouTube page. I also post some kind of technique videos and movement stuff. Mostly for my team, but it's open for anybody to watch. And that's just BJJ_MVMT. So like BJJ Movement on YouTube.
Awesome. Mike, I swear you have a TikTok account. You're just lying to us. Just give me one sec. I'll find it. I'm just kidding. And if Mike's face is like, what are you talking about, man?
And only fans. But not
only fans, yeah. And if you are somehow in Fountain Hills, Arizona, definitely check out Mike's gym, Impact Fountain Hills, right?
And like, yeah, that's we where love you having so guests.
Definitely.
You know, we're in a beautiful little town. We have guests in town like literally every week. Somebody stops in. And so, you know, we never charge a drop-in fee. Everybody's welcome, all affiliations. You can stay on my couch. You can stay in my guest room. Seriously, like I love people, man. So anybody, no, awesome. Anytime, you can, if you're listening to this, message me on Instagram and say, hey, I'm coming over. And I'll have food waiting for you.
Wow. Nice. That's awesome. Mike, you seem like such a great guy, man. I appreciate you being on this podcast so much. Do you mind sticking around for a couple of things?
No, not at all.
Do you have time?
Yeah, of course.
Yep. Prince, before we get to the fight on site, because it's this weekend, I just wanted to ask Ben Askren versus Jake Paul. Mike, we talked about this fight 7 weeks ago when we did our first episode, which we never released because it was kind of choppy, so we gave up on it. But we are now days away from the fight. You see the training videos of these two guys. You see the interactions between them. What do you think? Who's going to win this fight, Mike?
Paul's going to win.
What?
Yes, oh, yes, no. Mike. You see, that's what I'm talking about. Mike, please share your rationale. Why? Why?
I'm a huge Ben Askren fan. I have been forever. I was like watching him, hoping he'd be in the UFC for years and years and years.
Yeah.
Right? He just had hip surgery, and he says that a lot of his downfall has been his bad hips for like a decade. So I think he'll look good, but boxing is different, man. And I think that, you know, you see it with even like McGregor versus Floyd, right? Like it's not the same pace. It's not the same rules. Your ability to clinch, to stop damage and to just stall things out. I think Jake looks bigger. I think he'll be younger, fitter, stronger. And I think even though Askren is the far superior martial artist, I think in the boxing rule set, I think Paul wins.
Oh man, this is so bad. I'm so nervous.
I'm not happy about it. I am not happy about
it. No, this is your professional opinion. Yeah. Prince, what are you saying, Prince?
Hey, look, man, who out of the three of us, who here has a fight record? Mike does. So I'm definitely saying I'm going for Paul, because Paul, you know what? He's been training with Masvidal. He's been look at what he did to Nate Robinson a couple fights ago. He's been, you know, he's training well and he's jacked. Like he looks he's really focused. Like, and you could see his strikes, man. I think he's gonna stun a couple of people, man.
Oh, we all lose because of it, just so you know, right? The whole fight world is lesser because
we're all in trouble.
It's not good.
Nah, okay. Man, I was hoping you guys were going to say Askren so I could say Jake Paul. I'll tell you, the thing that I am so nervous about is every time I watch Ben Askren training, and I know these are videos that he's doing to send out and all that.
Yeah.
But have you seen where he has his punching bag with Jake Paul's face on it? Have you seen that?
I have.
Okay. So the problem with that is Jake Paul's face is low on the bag.
Yeah.
And so when he's punching low. And I'm like, this guy is way taller than you. So unless you're practicing all body shots, I feel like your muscle memory needs to punch a little higher.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then he released a video, I think it was yesterday, where he's might have been an open workout or something, and his coach is holding pads low again. And I'm like, what? Come on, man. Like, you gotta, like, your coach should be muscle memory to be holding them up high for you. Yeah. Because again, he's punching his shoulder height.
Right.
And I'm like, that is Jake Paul's nipple height? Like, what are you aiming for? My wife is shorter than I am. I'm 6'2", so my wife is shorter. When we do train, she always holds like this.
Yeah.
You know, like she's holding me up here because I ask her to, because I'm like, hey, I can't be punching down like this.
Right.
You know, I got to punch at least head height. And she hates it because, you know, it's so tiring to hold up here. But you got to do that. For that reason, forget it. I'm still going Ben Askren because I cannot believe that he's going to lose. But if he does lose, that is why.
But yeah. Tim, I think, you know, when they promote all these videos and they show it all online, they just, you know, it's all for show. It's for the hype. You know, they do these little things here and there, like, oh, they're doing this song, this wrong. And then come fight time, you're like, whoa, okay, I didn't see that coming.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It could just be for the hype, right?
You know what? Here's the thing. To tie this around, because I am amazing at making things come full circle here. Mike told us about how he is an athlete overall, right? Everything he's done, he's excelled at. He's excelled at the inline skating, excelled at Cirque du Soleil, excelled at gymnastics, now excelling at BJJ. There's people that are just natural athletes and that have the ability to succeed in whatever they do. I'm going to pray to God that is Ben Askren. and that he can be a wrestling guy, he can be an MMA guy, and for God's sakes, he can be a one-fight boxing guy and win this fight. That's, I mean, natural athlete. That's what I'm going to get.
I hope so.
So Mike,
you've never, so bad.
Let me ask you, Mike, have you ever been cut from a team at all or ever felt the pain of being cut?
Yeah.
So, when?
Okay, so let's see. I was I'm 40, right? So I was middle school, like the height of Michael Jordan era, right?
Okay.
I was the biggest basketball fan ever. I played basketball every single day. I practiced all my moves. I had all the starter jackets. I was basketball everything.
Did you ever have a Toronto starter jacket?
And so, no, I didn't.
Oh, damn it.
I'm sorry.
Neither did I. Don't worry about it.
And, you know, I went in and I tried out for basketball in seventh grade or grade seven, and I was cut. And my coach said, "Hey, maybe you should stick to wrestling." And that was a good call. You know, I was devastated, obviously. And then grade five, I played football, and I was not. I mean, I don't even want to have something. My coach yelled at me or whatever, and I took my helmet off and I threw it at my coach, and I ran home and cried, and never played football again. So, wow. So yeah, I'm terrible at football, terrible at basketball.
Mike, I think that's the only thing I have one up on you. The only reason why I made the basketball team in elementary school was just because we didn't have enough players. Like we literally, if I left, there would have only been four players to play in that team. So they'd be like, "Prince, we need you." I'm like, I got you guys.
And that was a co-ed team too. So
yeah, exactly. That's
even more. Mike, the last segment we do on the show is something we call Fight on Sight. So this is where we do a fantasy fight. Prince and I both pick someone. We'll go through this kind of quick because I know we're running long. I appreciate it. We're in honor of you, we are doing BJJ edition. So we will both pick a fighter to go up against one another. This is fantasy, so don't worry about age. Don't worry about weight class. Don't worry about gender. Okay. Prince, who is going first?
Can you go first? Because I think Mike's going to like my pick.
No, he's not going to like your pick.
He's going to love my pick. I think he's going to love
my pick is, and I voted against her on the podcast last week, but when I posted my picks, I picked her, Mackenzie Dern.
All right.
Oh, man. Mackenzie Dern on last weekend changed my mind. She seems to be making the weight cut incredibly easy now. Like she shows up, she looks good, she's healthy, she's happy, she looks jacked.
Yeah,
her striking is very impressive, and we all know her jiu-jitsu credentials, right? She is massive in the jiu-jitsu. I feel like she is a problem for anyone in the strawweight division now. You know, Nina Ansaroff, she tried to keep her way as best as she could with long jabs and distance. The minute Dern gets you to the ground, it is lights out, over. Like, you are getting finished. She has such a great finishing rate. She's 11-1 now. Mackenzie Dern, man, she's going to be champion by the end of 2022. Guarantee. Like, I think her next fight should be Ioana.
Yeah.
I think she should take on Ioana, get rid of her, finish her off, and then move on to the title, because her versus Wei Li would be very interesting if Wei Li can continue to hold the title. But I don't see any of these girls having the jiu-jitsu to stop her. I think she's going to finish a bunch of people. So, Prince, that is my pick.
Okay.
Good luck.
All right. So, my pick for today's BJJ edition is not only but the late, great Helio Gracie.
Woo-hoo.
Okay. Mike. Do I need to say more? Like, what do I have to say, man? This is the godfather of jiu-jitsu. Actually, like, did a little research on him. So Gracie founded and developed the self-defense martial arts system of Gracie Jiu-Jitsu, also known as Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. You know, the head of the Gracie family, this guy, he is the one who developed it all, right? And so, you know, I there's not much I can say, you know, after that. Like, Mike, what do you think?
Hold on. We're so, talking. So the question is, yeah. Helio versus Mackenzie Dern.
In a jiu-jitsu match.
Yes.
Or in MMA.
Jiu-jitsu match.
Wait, can we do MMA? Like, give me a chance.
Either way, the fight lasts maybe, we're talking both in their prime, right? Both weigh the same.
Okay.
Everything's equal.
Yeah.
Right? The fight is done less than 30 seconds, and Helio is dead.
Wow.
Dern easy. Not even close.
Why do you say that from a master jiu-jitsu practitioner?
Jiu-jitsu has evolved so much that I think, you know, even if you look at, like, you know, guys like Hicks and Gracie, Hicks and Gracie's incredible, right? Yes, at one point, he was like 300-0 or some crazy record.
Yeah.
You know, if you put Hicks and Gracie versus like Buchecha or like Kanan Duarte, they're not even close to the same realm. You know, I think that what a black belt knew 20 years ago is like what a blue belt knows now.
Wow. Okay.
Because the world has changed. Yeah.
The world has changed. You know, I mean, the internet and being able to learn from different people and being able to have, like I said before, man, Marimbola wasn't a thing 6 years ago. People were thinking, you know, they thought it was like this blip of time, you know, and you know, leg locks weren't a big play.
Right. Right.
You know, the game has just evolved so much that I think, I think that modern jiu-jitsu, you know, just dominates in every facet of it.
That's so interesting, Mike. I knew I liked you for a reason, but oh, I mean, man. Never picks my pick. So
yeah,
but you know what? I wasn't expecting that. I honestly, if you bring out the guy who invented the thing, of course you'd pick that guy because he's the one who developed the whole martial art, right? But I mean, the way you explained it, I mean, yeah, it's true, right? And I mean, over the years, it just developed. And so if they actually got into a role, it'd be a totally different story. Wow. Yeah. Okay.
I mean, just 30 seconds. If you guys haven't watched it, right? Mackenzie Dern had a match, Nogi World Championships against Gabby Garcia.
Yep.
Right.
I saw that.
And Mackenzie wins. Right.
Yeah. And crazy. Like, that's crazy, right? But too.
But to think that any traditional martial artist could be as big as Gabby and not win through traditional martial arts, right? It shows you that the evolution, the arts aren't even similar. I mean, I think if you brought Helio back and put him in a room and had him watch, you know, Craig Jones teach a class, I don't think Helio would recognize that as Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu.
Yeah.
It's as different as Aikido is from Hapkido, is from Jiu-Jitsu, is from wrestling, is from Judo, right? Like, they are at a brief glance, they are similar, but upon any deep inspection, modern Jiu-Jitsu is vastly different from anything that even was a thing in the 80s or 70s or 60s.
Wow. Okay. All right. Well, you know what, Mike? The only way we'll figure this bad boy out is if we put it in the Fight On Site simulator. Exactly. That's the reaction I wanted to hear, because this is right here is an $80 million simulator that we've put in together. We've actually developed it over the years. You put all the fighters' profiles, everything in, put it into this machine and say, hey, you know what? This is what's going to, you know, give us the right answer. Who's going to come on top? And this is a Fight On Site simulator.
Representing. Ready for this, Mike.
Mike, here you go. Are you ready, man? This is it.
Yeah.
All right. So for our Mackenzie Dern Fight Simulator picks, Captain America.
All right. So we've got, is that a sticker today?
It's a sticker.
Okay. Not on a popsicle stick or anything. Just you're holding this time.
I'm holding it this time because you know
he normally puts it on a stick or a popsicle or a straw, but this time doesn't even bother.
No, because you know what? It kept sticking onto the popsicle stick, and I can't really get the actual reaction and the actual kicks and all that. So
$80 million.
$80 million. Like, look at this, man. Come on, I'm sweating buckets over here.
Next,
the one and only, our representation of Mr. Gracie. The Incredible Hulk.
See, this is perfect.
There you go. Here we go. Mackenzie Dern comes on top.
What? Mike, you're really lucky that he didn't ask you to do the sound effects.
I was kind of jealous, I'm not going to lie. I thought, man, they have a sound guy. They have this professional person who just makes a sound effects. It's crazy. It was really good. I was so impressed.
The money we invest, Mike.
That's it. And you know what it was? You know what? The simulator heard the explanation from your end, Mike. And wow, like I wasn't expecting that. Man, I swear he was going to pick Gracie, man, for sure. No. I'm like, oh, this guy's going to come. He knows. I know the answer. And actually, you know what? So my Tim, actually let him know what's the record so far between the two of us in terms of.
Oh, it's really bad, Mike. I'm losing like 5-1, 6-1. Oh, it's pretty bad. I got to look it up. Every time I pick someone, like I had 50 Cent versus Michael Jackson and I lost. People picked Michael Jackson like by a mile.
Mike,
like really bad.
Mike, I picked Mike. I was the one who picked Michael Jackson, man.
Oh my God.
Yeah, brutal. Mike, it could not go worse for me. Mike, this was incredible to have you on as a guest, man.
Oh, thank you so much.
I appreciate you coming on so much. You've been such a nice guy to us on social media. Your social media is incredible. Again, people, please do go and follow Michael Currier. His Instagram is great. Follow his matches, follow his fights. Cheer for this guy, man. You are such a likable guy. We wish you all the best in your continued successes and with your gym, and wish your wife success on her next fight, man. That is crazy. That's exciting for her. She's a brown belt at Impact Jiu-Jitsu.
She is. Yep.
She's a brown belt. Yeah. Awesome. Before we go, Mike, is there anything you want to say? Is there anything you want to leave off with? Give some words of wisdom.
I appreciate you guys. I think, you know, it's so cool to be able to tell my story and, you know, get out there and I am, you know, I'm floored that anybody wants to talk to me. So it means the world to me. It really does.
No, thank you, Mike. And man, there is so much more to talk to you about. I could go on about Cirque du Soleil forever. Jeez Louise. Guys, please do follow us on Instagram and YouTube at Fight Insight Podcast. If you want to be a guest on the show, if you want to reach out to us, please message us at fightinsightpod@gmail.com. Prince, I'll give you the last word.
Yeah, and actually, one last thing, Mike, and also thank your wife for bringing the charger, because that right there was like the lifeline. You guys make it seem like, oh, it was a nonchalant. You're like, hey, you know what? It's okay. But thank you, Michael's wife, for bringing that
in.
She's the real hero, right? And I like the this too. What kind of move was that? One of these.
Nothing to see here.
Right? All right. So yeah. Well, again, Mike, thank you for having us, and thank you for coming into the show. And I appreciate you, and hopefully we'll have you back on the show next time. And again, I wish you nothing but the success. All right, buddy.
All right, guys. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much, Mike. Have a wonderful day. Thank you, guys.
Take care.